Good morning and welcome to the KGNC Golden Spread Agribusiness News Hour. Monday morning comes upon us, and of course, each and every Monday right here at KGNC, we talk Texas wheat, a very vital part of the year for the wheat growers, almost the preseason, getting ready to start planting again. It comes around so quickly. We're lucky enough to have a professor and an extension agronomist from Texas A&M AgriLife, state hemp and sunflower specialist. He's in the Department of Soil and Crop Sciences. Dr. Calvin Trossel joins us this morning. Doctor, welcome to the KGNC Ag Show.
Well, good morning. Thanks for having me. Thanks for the Wheat Producers Board for giving us a connection here to chat wheat today.
Most definitely, most definitely. And normally we look at the production side and we look at the crop updates, what the field's doing, but you take another slant to it and you look at, the factors that go into planting a crop, the moisture, those sort of things. And we're going to look at some of those issues that wheat growers are facing this fall. And this part of the country, it's never far from your mind. Have we had enough rain to start a good crop this year?
Well, I think so across most of the region. I'm based in Lubbock, and from this area to the north, I think from about mid-August, most of the region has had in the range of about 3 to 6 inches of rain. Now, first, before you know it, one producer is going to say, well, where's that at? I didn't have that much. But no, we've had some severe drought conditions this summer, and they have alleviated some, not completely. And I think most of the wheat that's for grazing, and that's actually about half the wheat that's in the Texas High Plains, especially in the Panhandle, most of that wheat is already drilled in the hopes that they can get some fall grazing. And then the grain wheat, we don't need the early planting dates for grain wheat. So those kind of preferred targets range from about October 1st up against the Oklahoma Panhandle to maybe about October 20th here in the Lubbock region. But if you're a dryland farmer and you've got moisture and it's a few weeks before you normally plant wheat for grain, you probably go ahead and do it. So I wouldn't be surprised that a little bit of wheat for grain is going to be planted pretty quick, as long as they still got some salt moisture that they can get it up. That's the key. Mm-hmm. You got to get a stand. You got to get it up. And once that happens, then, you know, you've got some wheat that's tough and it might have to wait for the next rain. But if it's established, then that's a plus.
And then, you know, around here, especially as we get close to the fall, the first day of fall was yesterday, Thursday of last week. We start getting showers a little bit. We start getting a little rain, and people automatically assume or they think, well, we've got a lot of moisture. The drought is over. You looked at the drought monitor that is about that we can look and see and trace what it looks like. Are we still considered under a severe drought condition?
Well, in parts of the Texas High Plains, the answer is yes. Right now, the driest conditions appear to be north of the Canadian River. And then there's another area to the southwest and south of Amarillo, say from Hereford to about Plainview, that looks to be more in the severe drought category. But the drought monitor for our listeners, what is this? I enjoy looking at those colorful maps. You know, I can check up on the region in Kansas where I grew up. Mm-hmm. But droughtmonitor.unl.edu, that UNL, that's University of Nebraska. It's a collaborative effort to University of Nebraska and NOAA, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, color-coded maps that give the severity of drought. And, of course, we had a lot of red and even maroon color on there this summer, and we've seen that pull back. But the thing that a lot of people say, well, I've had 6 inches of rain since mid-August, and it still tells me that I'm in moderate drought conditions. How can that be? Well, you don't quickly get into drought conditions, and you don't quickly get out of drought conditions either. It's a function of soil moisture and even stream flow and some things like that. And so, you know, we're certainly better, but sometimes that gives you an indication of where things are at. But we're certainly in a much better situation over pretty much all the Texas High Plains compared to where we were about a month ago.
Yeah, most definitely. Now, one of the things that Texas wheat producers and in any industry, especially in the grains of corn and things like that, a lot of care and research goes into the variety of wheats, the seeds they put in the ground. You have some drought-tolerant things, some heat-tolerant seeds, and that sort of thing. Tell us about the pick wheat varieties. How is that determined? And how do you present that to the producer and get them to try that product, to go forward with it?
Okay, so pick wheat varieties. This is for grain. This is a concept that was started by a former colleague of mine, probably well-known still to many of your ag producers across the Texas High Plains, Dr. Brent Beam. He was a longtime extension agronomist there at Amarillo. And about 20 years ago, or even maybe a little bit longer, he started the concept of the pick wheat varieties. And in fact, you know, this has been kind of fun for me. We've expanded that concept across the state based on the production region. But the pick wheat grain varieties is, given all the data that we have, which I assure you, David, is more pages than any farmer would want to sit down and have to sift through, because we're looking at years of data in different locations. But what we do within AgriLife Extension is we sort through this information. We're looking for varieties that are consistent performers, and we require a minimum of 3 years of data. The pick wheat varieties, the way I think about this, if I was back home anywhere, if I farmed in the High Plains, our pick varieties for grain in the High Plains, these would be varieties that I would choose to, I would consider to plant on my farm. A farmer may say, well, I have a variety of wheat that I really like. It's done great for me. It's not on your pick list. And I say, well, that's fine. Keep planting it. But here's some other varieties that may be as good, if not better. Maybe get six sacks and try a couple acres and just see what you think. But those pick varieties are not necessarily or automatically the highest yielding wheats, although, of course, that's very important. But it also reflects some things like resistance to leaf rust or stripe rust or maybe wheat streak mosaic virus. In the case of the rust, having a good resistant wheat variety could be the difference between having to make an expensive chemical spray. And so those are pluses there. The pick list, all of our county agents have that list. It's posted currently on the web at the Wheat Producers Board website. Also here at the Texas A&M Center website at Lubbock on our wheat page. And so there's some familiar names there. There's several PAM varieties. There's also some other varieties that come from some of the companies. And for the High Plains, we feel it's appropriate. We divide that list into dry land and limited irrigation and full irrigation. There are a few differences there depending on the producer's environment. But the pick list has been a really good thing for AgriLife Extension and for producers, because it helps us focus in on those varieties that are doing a little bit better. When I have made the calculations, we find that the wheat pick varieties as a group relative to all other varieties that we test. And in one of our test sites, normally we'll have about 30 to 40 individual varieties in it. The pick wheat varieties over years have tended to yield about 5 to 8% higher than as a group than all the other varieties in the trials that we have. And so that certainly shows you that, yes, they tend to be at the higher end of the yield spectrum, and there's some other key traits that can be important as well.
Doctor, you look at the varieties that a seed a producer can get. Just over the last couple of weeks, we've heard from the Biden administration's EPA about the atrazine thing. How vitally important is it that you guys develop seeds that are resistant to pathogens that will eliminate, the growth of weeds and those sort of things? Weeds take water. They take valuable nutrients away from the plant. How important is it to have that as a part of your pick list?
Well, currently there are a few wheat varieties from some of the private companies that have herbicide tolerance in them. And we don't have any of those varieties yet have made our picks list. But that could be another reason why a farmer, in Oklahoma for years, they talked about how what a terrible problem some of the weedy grasses were joining goat grass, Japanese brome, some of those types of things that would infest their fields. And so they needed grass control in a grass crop. Well, now that's not easy to do. Mm-hmm. But Clearfield was one herbicide-tolerant technology. It's in other crops, too. It's non-GMO in wheat. There's no currently there's no genetic engineering in any wheat varieties. It's being researched, but there's nothing commercial that is. But there's another technology that I'm not familiar with yet called Coaxium. We have a few of those have just started to be entered in our wheat variety trials in the High Plains. And so that herbicide tolerance, that could be another trait that could enter into, you know, a producer's a choice for wheat variety. If they've got some fields they need to plant wheat on, but they do historical issues with weeds there, this might be another way to address that.
Right now, it's pregame, I guess you could say, for producers getting ready to put out winter wheat. What are wheat seed supplies looking like this year? Is it still good seed available that they can pick up?
Well, what I've heard back from producers, and this goes back even over a month, that some of the choice varieties, TAM 114 is probably one example. I've heard TAM 205 is another. Those are both some of our pick wheats that seed supplies have been kind of scarce. I think part of that, David, is the harvest season that we had in earlier in 2022. We had tough conditions, dry conditions earlier this year. Yes, most of those seed blocks are going to be irrigated, but the yield of wheat seed for planting was not as high as it probably normally was. And so, yes, there have been some shortages on some of the preferred varieties. If you're a farmer and you're planning to plant wheat for grain here in the next month or so in the High Plains and you haven't made any inquiries on what seed varieties and so forth are available, you probably need to make that phone call as soon as business opens at 8 o'clock. Just to make sure that you can get what you want, or start thinking about, I can't get any of my preferred varieties, so I'm going to have to go to Plan B. So the picks list still might be helpful there, but otherwise we go further into varieties that you know, a few of the varieties might have been former picks. Other varieties that maybe are good wheat varieties, but we don't have 3 years of data. We may have two years of data. And so, but farmers need to check on that. I know we want them to be able to plant the varieties that they prefer, but that might be a little bit more difficult this year.
Right. Now, here at KG&C, we really wholeheartedly believe that the ag affects every sector. You may not be a guy who gets on a combine every day, or, you might work in a shop, but agriculture affects everything we kind of do around in this area. And the last thing I want to get into with you is wheat prices have been high for nearly a year, about $9 bucks a bushel. A couple of years ago, that price was $5 to $6 a bushel. Does this mean higher prices at the register for the consumer?
Well, I'm glad you asked that, because this is a question that I think a lot of consumers maybe don't quite understand. When I was a farm kid growing up in Kansas, we used to pride ourselves that if you spent a dollar on a loaf of bread, that maybe about 15 cents of that dollar went to the farmer.
Wow.
You know, at those prices that we had in the recent past where wheat was $5 and $6 a bushel, that translated to a loaf of, you know, for every dollar that you spent on a loaf of bread, that was only about 5 to 6 cents of that dollar actually went to the farmer who grew the wheat. And you realize, oh, that is not very much. Where does that other 94, 95 cents go? Well, you've got milling and baking and transportation and retail markup, some advertising, all those kinds of things factor in there. And so with these prices that now $9 a bushel, in theory, that should mean that the cost of that wheat in that loaf of bread, that dollar, that maybe that price is in the range of about, say, 9 cents out of a dollar goes to the farmer. So you're only talking about a couple cents, if it's a 24-ounce loaf of bread, you're talking about maybe 5 cents But I'm sure consumers are listening to this. Well, I would be happy if the price of a loaf of bread had only gone up 5 cents. It's probably been up more than that.
Yeah.
But that sometimes the farmers get blamed, like, oh, mm-hmm. you're making all that money, those high prices. But no, really, you know, the cotton in a pair of jeans,
yeah.
the wheat in a loaf of bread, all those things, the wheat in a pound of pasta and so forth, they are really actually a very minor cost of the overall product.
It looks like on both ends of the spectrum, the final buyer, the purchaser, the consumer, and the producer, they get the short end of both of those sticks, don't they? You know, it's the guy in the middle that comes out right.
that's one way to put it. But, you know, when you have crops like wheat, where a wheat farmer, unless they're growing a specialized crop mm-hmm. Or have a special production arrangement, we tend to be price takers.
Right.
We take what the market will offer. If you're a blueberry farmer or you're growing watermelons, maybe potatoes. We have some potato production along the New Mexico state line from the Lubbock, you know, Seminole up into the Dalhart area. Maybe those are examples of price makers, not price takers.
Wow.
And so people with, you know, more specialty crops, sometimes they're in a better position to set the price rather than take the price, and that can be a key difference there. Those crops, though, of course, they're not going to be the large acres, and they're going to take a lot more level of management.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of that is the timing of when you're ready to hit the market with those potatoes or watermelon or blueberries.
Right.
And that's a challenge that a lot of us is, say, if you're growing wheat or corn or cotton, we don't face those types of
mm-hmm.
decisions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's a big difference, and it makes a big difference in what the consumer and the producer looks at and sees when they have to make these decisions. You can find more information from Dr. Trossel from the Lubbock A&M Agri Life Center at lubbock.tamu.edu. You'll find most of his reports and presentations there. Also, crop testing programs, the variety and hybrid trials for Texas. Go to varietytesting.tamu.edu, and also the Texas A&M University Department of Soil and Crop Services. They're at soilcrop.tamu.edu. We'll put all these sites up on our website. Doctor, thank you so much for the opportunity to talk with you today. Just some great information out there.
Well, thank you. You're very welcome. Talking agriculture is a happy thing for me, and we want to thank the Wheat Producers Board for giving us the opportunity to visit today.
Anytime you've got time, we'd love to have you back on. Just some great information. We appreciate your effort and what you do each and every day for agriculture across the High Plains.
Well, that's it from us here at the KGNC studios. Thank you again, Mr. David Lovejoy and Calvin, for coming out, talking a little bit about what's going on in the wheat industry, as well as some common concerns and those top wheat picks for this year and for the next year. Some great information out there. Don't forget, there is a new episode of Pasture to Pavement, Agriculture, the Original Innovators, that dropped last week. We talked with Jess Priels. Make sure you catch it. It's going to be a great episode. I love talking to the influencers as well, our big, big people that really matter in how agriculture's voice is heard. So make sure you catch it. And of course, don't forget the Afternoon Ag Show is happening again today at 6 p.m. So make sure you listen to that. Great headlines, new information from the Texas Farm Bureau Network as well as ourselves. So it's a great time to listen and tune in. But until then, I'm your host, Bryce Hudson, signing off. You have a great and blessed rest of your day.